Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. And we're going to switch gears a little bit today and talk more about midterm and corporate rentals. So we have a very cool guest who you've probably seen around, Vivian Yip. How's it going, Vivian?
Going great. How about you, Avery?
I can't complain. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in the real estate business.
Sure. My name is Vivian Yip. I am in Austin, Texas. I have been in real estate investing since 2004, but I didn't take it seriously until 2018 when I started looking at my life and thought, oh my God, is this what corporate life is going to take me to the same 9-to-5 rat race? And I thought, you know, if I don't do anything different, I'm accepting my circumstances. So I started looking into real estate. And back then, everyone was doing house flipping, at least on HGTV. And I was like, how hard can it be? So I convinced my husband, who's super handy, to try house flipping with me. And over time, we learned that if you keep flipping houses, it's just like having another corporate gig where you're actively earning income. So I read a book called Tax-Free Wealth that taught me that in order to really build wealth, you have to own the real estate. But in Austin, it's so hard to own real estate and cash flow. So that's when I was like, well, what about STRs? Like STRs, people are starting to dive into short-term rentals. This is by 2019. I thought, you know what? This is a great opportunity to turn this property that I initially bought as a flip and turn it into a short-term rental. So my story in short-term rentals begins in 2019, but I had to pivot in 2020 when the pandemic hit. And surprise, surprise, here I am in midterm rentals. And it's a strategy that I've come to love. And I love teaching other people about midterm rentals as well.
Awesome. So is there a particular type of market that lends itself better to midterm rentals than, say, short-term rentals?
Definitely. I have people that have lake houses in the middle of nowhere. They're beautiful properties that make great short-term rentals. But honestly, midterm rentals, the best strategy is to buy those urban, boring properties that are close to great schools, great employers, highway arteries, hospitals, just like you would for an investment strategy in the long-term rental space.
Okay. And do midterm rentals overall have to be typically, do they have a higher standard of luxury than a typical long-term rental, or are they similar?
I would say that midterm rentals is a hospitality business. So you have to at least be a B-class property, right? There's different avatars that you can try to attract. I would say that travel nurses and construction teams aren't necessarily so picky about how the property looks. They might not need granite countertops. But if you're trying to attract the corporate client or someone with a higher paying clientele, it's just like short-term rentals. The better the amenities, the more money you can charge.
Okay, that makes sense. And where do you typically get your clients, or I guess not clients, your guests? Do you call them guests or tenants in midterm?
I call them guests. I don't like to call them tenants for various reasons, but I consider them guests. It's a hospitality business, right? If it's tenants, it's an arm's length transaction where it's not that kind of relationship. So I will say that even though I had to pivot to doing direct bookings during the pandemic, I've actually migrated back to Airbnb, and I've built a foundation on Airbnb and VRBO as the baseline of my business. And then that frees up my time to go and attract other direct bookings with the businesses that use midterm rentals. So for instance, I have Instant Book On in my Airbnbs because a lot of people don't know this, but 60% of people on Airbnb are using Instant Book. That's number one. Number two, a fact that a lot of people don't know is that Airbnb, despite it being a short-term rental platform, more than 25% of their nights booked are for 30-day stays and more. So there's a lot of traction in the midterm rental space on Airbnb. So if I can't beat Airbnb, I might as well join them. And so I turn on my instant book and I have a great property management system that allows me to screen the guests appropriately so that I'm not opening myself up to a ton of risk.
Okay. I love that. And so what's the typical type of guest who stays in these? I remember when midterm rental just first started getting a lot of traction, I guess back in like 2020, I think is when I first started hearing a lot about it. Everybody was like, travel nurses, travel nurses, travel nurses. And I kept thinking like, should we not have other types of guests outside of one small sect of one industry? So I'd love to hear what you've seen over the years and what you see the most of. And is it travel nurses or was that just a fad?
Well, travel nursing is definitely not a fad, but I would say that you have to be able to open your mind greater than just travel nurses, right? If you think about what happened during the pandemic, the government gave a lot of money to the hospitals to hire travel nurses because they needed the staffing. So their contracts were really lucrative, very high, lots of them all around, but things have come back to a more sustainable level. So trying to attract travel nurses is probably not the best strategy. I think you really need to have a diversified strategy where you can attract multitudes of people. I see a lot of people that are trying to attract travel nurses with 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. The truth is most travel nurses are renting studios, 1 bedrooms and 2 bedrooms. And you can see this on Furnish Finder stats. So for me, I try to, because my properties are in urban areas, I try to attract a multitude of different people, including families, construction workers. I do get the travel nurse every now and then, but most of them don't want to pay more than $1,600 in my market. So it's hard for me to attract them when my properties are going for $3,000 to $6,000 a month. So it just really depends on who you're trying to attract. But travel nurses, the contracts are far and few between. They get canceled a lot. So if you're only targeting travel nurses, that's a really risky way to approach midterm rentals.
Are you afraid of saturation? Well, join Short Term Shop Plus and let the saturated be afraid of you. Become the best in the business at stsplus.com.
I agree with that. So you said you're getting $3,000 to $6,000 a month on your properties. Are they all in Austin?
They're in the Austin area. And then we have, you know, the Hestia brand is nationwide. Okay. And some of the properties I've seen go for more than $10,000. So we actually have one property that rents for more than $8,000 a month.
Goodness. So two parts to this question. One, what is the guest avatar that typically rents for that much on a medium-term basis? And then B, how much are you paying for properties that are able to bring in that much?
So I would say the highest paying clients in midterm rentals are insurance contracts and government contracts. I haven't focused so much on the government contract myself that I'm going to leave that to Noble. I have a lot of work that I need to do. Do you know Noble Crawford?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So I still have a lot to learn from him on that perspective, but I work with the insurance companies as well and to attract those high paying guests. In addition, the other avatars are really just people that are remodeling and relocating.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then to answer your question, that one $8,000 property that we have is a 5-bedroom home in a suburb of Austin. And that one's, it just, because we had that instant book on, that insurance company booked it real fast. And it was great. They stayed for 2 months.
Oh, wow. Well, so let's talk about this insurance company thing. So if I'm somebody who's listening to this and I'm buying a midterm rental, which I did just buy one in New Orleans, by the way.
Congratulations.
Learning as I go. yes, first one. So, but if I'm somebody new who's like, oh, that insurance thing sounds interesting. How do you go about finding these insurance companies? Do they find you on Airbnb? Do you have to seek them out? Are you calling them? How does that work?
Oh my gosh. That is a big question, right? Because a lot of people think that they can just call the insurance company and the insurance company will have that exact client that needs that exact house that's close to the exact school that your home is zoned to. It's really not that easy. So having what's helped me, because I have the Hestia brand where we have over 250 properties now nationwide.
Oh, wow.
They come to us sometimes to find midterm rentals for their clients, but they've also booked our properties on Airbnb as well. It really depends on who that relocation specialist is. Mm-hmm. And if they come from the hotel team or if they come from the like other teams, it just, they go all over the place. They'll go on Zillow, they'll go on apartments.com, they'll go on Airbnb. I've never seen one come through VRBO, but we'll also have requests come through email as well and phone calls. So it's a matter of just being able to have the right property at the right time.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I think this is a really cool niche because there's been times like we need to remodel the house that we live in right now. Because when we moved in 2020, it was supposed to be like a live-in flip. It wasn't supposed to be the forever house, but then prices quadrupled and now we're kind of stuck in it. And there's a lot of remodeling that I want to do and we're going to have to move out for a little while so that can be done. And there's definitely been times when we were moving, we moved from New York City to Nashville. Like we didn't know anything about Nashville. And so we needed a place to live for a few months to figure out the town. And there was nothing. So I guess my question to you is, are you doing any kind of like Google advertising or anything to make sure when people go search for midterm rentals in the places that you operate, like Austin, that you come up first?
So my property management company does have a Google business page. Mm-hmm. We haven't gone so far as investing in Google clicks or anything like that, just because we haven't really had to. So far, our occupancy is, a lot of it comes from Airbnb because our properties are really easy to find and easy to book. I think that's one thing that a lot of people are struggling with in the midterm rental space is how do you be easy to book? Once you host someone for 30 days and more, you've got those lease agreements. You want to verify who they are. You want to have security deposits, right? So a lot of people struggle with how to enable an instant book for that. And there is the solution and a science to behind that a lot of people aren't understanding. And they're afraid to open up their calendars, which is probably why you're having a hard time trying to find something for 3 months or even 6 months.
So why do you think they're afraid to open up their calendars? What are they afraid of?
There's a couple of things. One is that they're afraid of getting advanced bookings, right? Mm-hmm. So if you open up your calendars for a year, they're afraid they're going to get a booking in March, for instance. And they're going to have trouble trying to fill the calendar in between. But just like short-term rentals is a strategy for controlling calendars. And you don't have to be afraid. You can just structure everything correctly to prevent those advanced bookings.
Okay, well, let's talk about that because I know that you have successfully kind of merged with one property, short terms and medium terms, where you can do both and kind of a hybrid model with one property. And I think that's kind of what you're leading into is, well, okay, let's say March is a big spring break time and I'm afraid to open up my calendar and oh my gosh, get this medium term booking and now I've lost spring break. So what is the secret sauce, so to speak, of making a hybrid of these two types of strategies into one property?
Yeah, hybrid is pretty much the bread and butter of my business. I love hybrid model because it offers flexibility to maximize revenue and occupancy. Now, if you're going to pursue midterm rentals, it is so important to ensure that you're prioritizing the midterm rental strategy first. What that means is that you're controlling your calendars first. You're not allowing those advanced bookings. But as you approach March break, that's when you can start opening up your calendars. But like for me, even for Christmas and whatnot, I don't allow people to book Christmas until we approach the 7-day window. So I'm looking for those last minute bookings, which I believe in the short-term rental space, a lot of last minute bookings are happening anyways today. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So I will prioritize midterm rentals first, try to attract that midterm stay guest. That way mm-hmm. I'm feeling satisfied with the consistent income and the predictable steady stream of good guests, right?
Right.
So by prioritizing midterm rentals first, I don't allow short-term rental bookings until closer to the time window. So for March break, let's assume it's March 15th. I don't allow those short-term bookings until 2 weeks prior if my place is not booked.
That is, you know, that is a strategy in the short-term rental specific world that it's kind of a risky one. Some of the agents who are on the short-term shop do this, and we don't do it, but some of them do. They're short-term only. They're in vacation market, so there's not any midterm action happening. And they will wait until 2 weeks before to open up their calendar because people will pay more typically for a last minute booking than if they're booking, you know, 5 or 6 weeks in advance, and they do crush it. They do get, they have higher prices per night, but also, you know, it's the stress of, well, what if this doesn't get booked? What if I price it wrong and it ends up not getting booked? But it can be, guys, this is an advanced strategy. So if you're brand new, do not do this and say, I told you to, but it can be a lucrative strategy to do that. But I like the idea of, okay, well, I'm prioritizing the longer term bookings and then opening it up for the big holidays and stuff, you know, just a little bit before to try and get those high price short terms.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I'm there too, right? I'm always thinking like, did I price correctly? Even though I'm doing comp sets and checking for other people's pricing, it is a little bit scary. I mean, I'm in that boat too, even though I've been doing it for almost like for 5 years now, basically. But you trust the process, understand your market, understand your competition. Of course, you wouldn't do that if you're one of 50 properties that are 3 bedrooms, 2 baths that aren't booked yet. But if you're a 5 bedroom and there's only 2 other or 3 other properties available, then you could totally play that game.
So you've got them across the country. You started in Austin. What factors do you look at when you're choosing a new market to go into? Because I know, I would assume you're not just going to have a one-off here and a one-off there. You're going to want multiple properties in one market just to kind of make the scale worth it. So what are the things that you look at when you choose a new market for this?
For midterm rentals specifically, you want to be in a B-class and up neighborhood.
Okay.
You don't want someone booking your property, showing up after they've blocked your calendar for a long period of time and saying, I don't like where this is. I don't feel safe. Because that is, in itself, it doesn't feel good as a host because you're like, well, I know I've been here and it's safe, but that's not how the guest perceives it, right? So number one, I would say even B-plus properties are the best. Then I would say go for a 4-bedroom in most markets. Cause I mean, at least in the Austin market, like you have to run comp sets and price labs to identify what properties there are the most of. So get something that's opposite of that, right? So in my market, 4 bedrooms, 5 bedrooms, they do really well because everybody has a 3-bedroom, 2-bath midterm rental.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then when we take in direct booking requests from the insurance companies, I would say 3 out of 4 are looking for single stories.
Oh, that's good to know.
If you're walking up and down stairs every single day and you are aging, like I'm only 45 and my knees are shot, right? I would want a single story. I get so many requests for single stories. I get so many requests for step-in showers.
Oh.
So those are things that you want to look out for. Like in a vacation rental, if you're just dealing with it for a weekend, it's not a big deal. But if you're going to live in a property for a specified period of time, these are conveniences that are highly valued.
Yeah, I can see that. And I would imagine, I don't know as much about the Austin short-term rental inventory, but I know when we worked in Nashville, most of the short-term rentable inventory were big, tall, skinny, at least like 3-story properties. So that's interesting. Is that the case in Austin too?
No, Austin has a lot of ranch style homes, but in areas like Houston and Dallas and the newer neighborhoods, a lot of them are like those townhomes structures that are built upwards, right? Mm-hmm. We actually have one property in Georgetown that's a brownstone, but there's an elevator in it. So we've been able to attract 2 families that even though they're aging, they love the elevator because they can get up to the rooftop deck.
Oh, nice. Okay. Love that.
Short-Term Shop Plus has live and recorded sessions on the following topics: creating compelling listings, marketing your STR property, setting up a new listing, managing from a distance, finding and acquiring your first or next STR, live revenue management audits with the pros, analyzing an STR for gross revenue. All of this and much, much more is now available at your fingertips with Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know to have success in the world of vacation homes and STR. Please join us at stsconsultation.com. That's stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by the premier short-term rental Facebook group, Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members, This is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for short-term rental, long-term wealth. That's short-term rental, long-term wealth on Facebook.
So you're looking at Price Labs to see what bedroom count there are the least of and going that route. I would have thought you just want to have, you know, one, two bedrooms. I did not think about having a bigger, you know, 4 or 5 bedroom midterm.
Yeah. You know, I think in the midterm space, we're competing a lot with corporate housing companies. Mm-hmm. And these corporate housing companies, they take these master leases out on apartments. So I feel like studios, one bedrooms and two bedrooms are kind of a dime a dozen.
Oh, okay.
Right. There's a high concentration of them, and it's hard to compete with them because there's just so many of them. But once you reach the 4-bedroom and 5-bedroom space, you'll see the inventory of those properties dramatically decrease. And I would say almost in any market.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I would imagine, and I want to hear what advice you have for somebody who's listening to this, who's, you know, maybe got a little bit of money and they want to get into midterm rentals, but hearing that, okay, but they go, say they go on Price Labs and they look, and there's not very many 4-bedrooms, 5-bedrooms. I personally, as getting into a new asset class, would be terrified to buy a big property and like, oh my gosh, what if it doesn't rent? Maybe there's a reason there's so many smaller. So what would your advice be there?
My advice is that if you look at the price between a 3-bedroom and 4-bedroom on an acquisition, the price isn't that different.
Yeah, that is a good point. Very good point.
For a 3-bedroom with an office, right? Mm-hmm. The point is that you have to buy the right asset, acquire the right property. Otherwise, if you don't, then you're going to not meet your expectations in rental income. So you're going to be competing with everybody that has a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. So go and be something different, stand out from the crowd, and make sure you're consulting the right agent in your market that has that experience.
That's a big one. And I know people think like, oh, I'm experienced in real estate, I don't need a buyer's agent or whatever. I personally have screwed up. Like, I know not everything there is to know, but almost everything there is to know about being a real estate agent. And when I go into a new market, I do not try to go directly to listing agents. I don't try to represent myself, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, I found my own house on Zillow, so my agent was useless. I mean, everybody can cruise Zillow. My Chihuahua can find a house on Zillow. What I'm looking for in a buyer's agent is the experience. I'm not paying you for clicking a link on Zillow and saying, how about this house? I want you to be paid and full price. I do not ask for referral fees either, because I'm paying for your knowledge of the market. So like our place in New Orleans, there's like a riverfront big shopping development going in that I never would have known. I wouldn't have known to even look for something like that. And she was like, oh yeah, that this, when this is finished, it's going to be really cool. And it's going to be a big attraction that you're going to be walkable to. So it's much more about, I want to know everything about the area and why it's good. Like I remember one time we were buying something in Chattanooga and our agent said, oh yeah, they just signed a contract two blocks away from here to move the new, AAA baseball team or whatever minor league baseball team they have there to down here. So this whole area is going to be great. So it's really important to have an agent who knows the area, not just for knowing the area, but what types of rentals work well in each place. Because I've been under contract on something with an agent who I thought was decent, and turns out they put us in the best area to live in a market, but not necessarily the best area to invest because of the way the traffic patterns are with getting to the attractions in that market. We ended up not buying it. But you have to make sure that you buy an agent, that you use an agent who understands this investment strategy and what you're trying to do.
I have two funny stories, because I'm a realtor here in Austin as well. My husband and I, we work as a team in midterm rentals and helping investors find cash flowing properties. Well, there was this guy that heard me on a podcast. He ended up calling me and said, Vivian, I really want to work with you. And we went back and forth, showed him a few houses. And then he called me and said, Vivian, I bought a place. And I was like, what do you mean you bought a place? He's like, well, I bought my neighbor's house and I bought a cash deal. I was like, okay, but don't you live in an HOA environment? He's like, oh no, I read everything. Everything's fine. I'm able to do a midterm rental. Well, so we start, my partner and I in our property management company, we started evaluating, and he doesn't just have one HOA, but he has two.
Oh, gosh. And there were
6 months restrictions.
Oh, no.
So not only that, he's like, oh, I was really smart. I hired an attorney to help me close the documents. I was like, but we're a title state. You don't need an additional attorney. So like two mistakes could have been saved just from that. And it was like a $700,000 house.
Oh, ouch.
And then recently there was a guy that owns like 150 midterm rentals. Okay. The guy he works with investors and he's got a ton of midterm rentals, and he went and found the key person in the Austin market that does a ton of retail clients. He's like number three sales in the nation. Well, that guy helped him buy, I think, three or four midterm rentals, but they're all HOA restricted. They're all multi-story properties. And now I think he's struggling to get them rented because he's not able to maximize the revenue and occupancy on them because of those restrictions from the HOA. So it's so important for you to work with someone that knows their market, understands how to read the deed restrictions, knows how to read the CC&Rs, you know, and basically has a good foundation of what areas or what neighborhoods are good so they can help you find something fast.
Yeah. We could probably have those conversations all day about times I've seen people screw up because they used the wrong agent or used an agent who was well-versed in primary homes, but not investments. And yeah, if we could go all day on that, I'm sure.
Or you're a brain surgeon to have your knee operated on.
Right.
You want to have someone that specializes and is fully focused on that particular niche to help you with your acquisition.
Yeah, totally, totally agree with that. So we're coming towards the end of our time here. So before I move on to the last three questions that we ask every guest, is there anything about your niche or your story that we haven't touched on that you feel like our listeners could benefit from hearing?
Well, I think my story inspires a lot of people. If you're listening in and you're not watching on YouTube or whatnot, I don't have any hair. I'm a bald Asian woman that lost her hair in pretty much 8 weeks. And it fell out really rapidly. I was working for corporate. I spent like 20 plus years in corporate. And my last job was at Apple. I was launching iPhone 12 during the pandemic. And through the entire stress of the situation between family being at home, the pandemic, global supply chain issues, and being responsible for executing the logistics behind, you know, Apple's most iconic product, my hair fell out really fast. And it was the midterm rental strategy that gave me the confidence to be able to quit my job and create myself a secondary income, or it became my primary income strategy, so that I had a choice to leave my job. Because if I hadn't learned about midterm rentals, if I hadn't learned about real estate investing, I would have been stuck. And who knows, like there were moments where my stress was so bad that I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next day.
Oh my goodness.
It was so, so bad. But because I had gained confidence as a side hustle investing in real estate and exploring midterm rentals so that I can not only find wealth and build my net worth, but it also allowed me time freedom compared to short-term rentals to be able to focus on my own personal healing journey. So I'm extremely passionate about midterm rentals because of the freedom and the wealth that it's provided me and my family, and gave me the option to quit my job when I needed to the most.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, you look beautiful. You are rocking it so hard. But second of all, I mean, if you'd stayed in that job, like who knows, would it have been your heart next, or would you have had a stroke from all that stress? So I'm so glad that this has given you like the option to not be that stressed out anymore. My goodness.
Yeah. There's no worse feeling in the world than feeling like you're cornered and having those heart palpitations and feeling so stressed and your heart just pounds all the time. You can't sleep. I've been there. I've 100% been there. But being able to navigate through the muddy waters of midterm rentals kept me busy, and I learned a ton. And now I'm able to help other people with the strategy.
Love that. Love it. Okay. So we're to the last three questions of the show. First question, what advice would you give 20-year-old Vivian?
Ooh, 20-year-old Vivian. Well, I'm really happy with the way my 20s turned out. You know, I spent my 20s mostly single, and I basically did whatever I wanted to do and explored and had fun and lots of adventures. But if I were to do it all over again, I would have done a better job in real estate investing. I actually got off on the right ground. My mom helped me find a property that I could buy and house hack. This is in Toronto in 2004, when you could still buy a house in the suburbs for $265,000. And I had a basement that I house hacked. And I wish I continued my investing journey. But back then, we didn't have communities like we do today. Podcasts didn't even exist. Mm-hmm. So my 20-year-old self, I would say, do more real estate investing, learn more about the Burr method. And yeah. And have lots of fun.
Great advice. And what advice do you have for a new investor who's interested in getting started today, maybe in this strategy, maybe in any real estate investing strategy, but it's the very end of 2024, really weird time in real estate. What's your advice?
Keep diversifying who you're learning from. There's lots of people with different strategies, and find the one and the story that resonates with you most. And sometimes it's really great to pay for mentorship. Right? Because you can take the elevator or you can just take the stairs. When you take the elevator, you can get close and into the circles and really learn hands-on how people are doing it quickly. Especially if you were in a situation like me, I wish I had somebody that I could pay to help me figure things out. But back then, nobody was doing what I was doing.
Yeah, so they didn't have it.
Midterm rentals wasn't even a thing, you know? It was. Corporate rentals has always been a thing, but this opportunity for independent hosts like myself to enter into the space is still very new. We call this the chasm, right? Like, it's before everybody starts adopting. We're still in that early adopter phase at this moment.
Love it. And last, what is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Wow, that's a good one. I have a couple. Like I mentioned earlier, Tax-Free Wealth. That is the book that Robert Kiyosaki, CPA, wrote. And it really gave me clarity as to why real estate is such a powerful strategy for paying less taxes. It's not about how much you make. It's about how much you keep. So that really helped me understand the tax strategies that I could put towards my own business. And then a more fun one, there's a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. Have you read this one yet?
Yes. Love it. Love it. Love it.
I'm such a foodie as well. I literally have goosebumps when I think about the story. And if you haven't read it, it's a story. The opening scene is a restaurant. It becomes number 50 in the world of the best restaurants. And you think number 50 in the world is like extremely amazing, but their whole team was disappointed and really upset with being number 50. So the story is their journey on becoming number one. And I think they were number one restaurant in the world for like 11 years running.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's a great story to inspire you about how you surprise and delight people and how hospitality can be such a great business if you apply it the right way.
Yes. I love that book. That's such a great book. I had all my real estate agents read it. And I think that's such a great one. Well, Vivian, thank you so much for coming on. If our listeners want to find you, follow you, maybe get some mentorship, how can they do that?
They can find me at vivianyip.com, and that's VIVIANYIP.com, or they can follow me on Instagram at VivianYip_official.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, and we'll catch you later.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.